From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
From Gortons of Gloucester.
I want to tell her that I love her, but the point is probably moot. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. It's Wednesday night, October 20th, 2010.
And this is show number 099.
While we're on the subject, we asked a couple of podcasts ago what we should do for our 100th podcast. And we got a lot of great suggestions. And I think what I have might be an answer.
Do you?
Maybe. Perhaps we shall put the 100th podcast in our pocket and save it for later. Because there are a couple of things that you and I, Paul, have talked about doing that would be super cool, but the timing didn't work out.
Have we now?
Maybe we have. Maybe we haven't. But I think we have. And I don't want to spoil the surprise if it happens, because it would be cool if it's a surprise.
Uh-huh.
It shouldn't be a surprise to you, Paul. It should be a surprise to you, listener.
It's a bit of a surprise to me. There's a couple of things that I'm thinking it might be, but there's nothing like obviously pointing in my brain going, ah, he's talking about this.
The thing with the people, where we were going to do it, and it would be a thing, but the timing didn't work out. The place I'd been recently to see someone else.
It could be, you know, we'll talk about it off the air.
I'll brief you on it later, but
I know what you're getting at now.
But the point is that we'll basically defer the 100th podcast. The next podcast we do will be number 101.
I do not want to do that.
Ha,
why not? He said confrontationally.
Well, why not?
Because it upsets my sense of order.
You don't have a sense of order.
I do about some things.
So tell me about your newfound sense of order.
Newfound sense of order is the immediate front runner this podcast.
I think we're sole sourcing this one.
Yeah, it is very much like your extremely limited Asperger's, which only crops up when like fire trucks go by.
Yes.
Or someone points across you.
Yes. Well, thank you for not revealing my real tell. Thank you, by the way. I appreciate that. I know you pulled up on that.
I did.
And you listening, you are listening now, you will never know. Will never know.
Nope.
Okay. I respect that.
No, here's what we will do. We will talk about this off the air, and either the next podcast will be number 100 or it will not be.
Well, either way, here's a solution. We will talk about this off the air, as it were. Mm-hmm. But if we do this thing, we can make it the 100th podcast celebration. So
It'll still be podcast like 112 or 125,
right,
or whatever it is, but it will be the 100th. That is, I'm entirely for that.
Okay. Because, I certainly do, and I think you do too, hate having to do things the conventional way.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think we've got something to go with now, at least something to go with for us to talk about off the air, because, listener, you're getting bored.
Yes. So here's a question, Storm. How many minions do we have?
367 in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions. Become a minion at paulandstorm.com. As I mentioned to you, Paul, just before we went on the air,
mm-hmm,
I have a number of pretty fun stuffages all written out here, or just things, And
yeah, well, sure, you say they're fun. You also thought it'd be a good idea to not do the next podcast as number 100. So we'll see about that.
That's because that would be fun, Mr. It is about order, Mr. Pink Floyd marching hammers guy. Paul, don't need no education.
I am very ordinal.
You're the pulp.
You're just full of evocative images tonight. Go ahead and hit me with something pithy and quick first. Let's start off punchy.
Want to do some battles?
Sure.
All right. Slot car racers versus electric trains. And note I said electric trains and not model railroads.
Yes.
And the battleground is which would hold Frankenstein's attention best.
I am
Frankenstein's monster. That's for you geeks that aren't picky about that.
All you anal retentive geeks out there can just shut the hell up. Here is the question. Is Frankenstein actively controlling these, or are we just running them in front of him, and which one will he watch more?
Exactly. Okay. And I'll leave it up to you if it's in serial or at the same time.
Okay.
You know?
Next question. Are the slot cars being operated by a qualified, competent slot car racer controlling person?
It is not being run by the Professional Slot Car Association this evening. Uh-huh. Should I keep talking? Okay, Paul's computer has gone belly up, although you know that because he's... you don't know that because he's talking to me and I can hear him, but you can't. And Paul is talking to me, he wants a countdown, and in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1... And
I am back.
And
I had
he's
my,
back.
For the nerds out there, I had my sample rate set too low, which was causing too much of a strain on my CPU, and Pro Tools decided it was going to stop recording. So I just increased my sample rate so that it will work now. So now I'm working. But anyway, my question I had left off at was the slot car being run by a competent controller.
Right, and I had said it is not professionally run. I'll say your average person who doesn't play slot cars all day or anything.
Mm-hmm. Because that's the key. Like, I would say that the slot cars would hold the Frankenstein's monster's attention longer as long as it wasn't being run by, say, the 6 or 7 year old Paul Saborin, who was all about going incredibly fast until it jumped the track in like 6 feet.
Right. Yeah, I would say your average slot car.
Okay,
controller.
I'm still gonna go with slot cars.
Why would you say slot cars?
Because they're going to move faster. And they'll be sort of flashier as opposed to a electric train. And when you say that, I'm assuming you're talking about basically just a train set up in an oval pattern.
Or, yeah, something simple, not like a big layout that has mountains and Chewbacca.
Yeah, I think the slot cars are, it's a brighter noise, it's faster movement, and I think that's going to attract the animal brain in Frankenstein's monster, hold his attention longer than a leisurely train ride in a slow, lazy circle.
I see what you're saying there, but I'm actually going to disagree for the very reasons you cited. Frankenstein loves music, and even though he has that part of his brain, I think that the motion of the train would be more soothing, and in the event that it is an extraordinarily inexpert operator, or just because they're slot cars, or, you know, electric cars as they are, if it were to spark, it would freak him out, like, forever, and he would wreck that slot car setup.
So that, interesting.
That's
point.
How I'm going. But I can see where you're going there. I can see in the hands of the Professional Slot Car Operators Guild.
Yep.
That indeed it might hold Frankenstein's attention more.
They had those actually. There was a hobby shop down the street from me when I was growing up. You know, the kind that had you know, model railroads and...
Right, and radio-controlled helicopters.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. A real good mom-and-pop hobby shop. Mm-hmm. And they had a whole big very intricate and long slot car track setup. And on weekends, older guys who, you know, looking back on it now, were probably like 16 or 17 years old. But when I was small, they just seemed like, quote unquote, adults come in and very seriously and methodically race against each other.
Oh, yeah. I used to love that stuff. And I remember this is actually something I'm not very proud of here. But I bought from Just Such a Hobby Shop when the summer after my senior year in high school, I bought a kit to make a radio controlled car. And I made the radio controlled car, and it was cool and it was fun. And I brought it to college with me. And I guess that's an okay thing to do. But it, I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I would bring it out into the quad and play with it. And I only brought it out once. It wasn't like the school where I went, there was a big enthusiast thing there for it. And it just sort of felt like I had done this because I had always wanted to, and I did, and that was that.
Was it like, would other people gather around you while you did it, or was it a solitary activity?
I was summarily ignored.
Do you, looking back on it now, whether or not you actually were, do you think people thought you were like the guy trying to get people's attention? Like, hey, look at me, I have a model car.
No, and I wasn't. It happened that like it was this little quad in between the dorms, and it had like stairs and things that, you know, you can jump on. It was just cool. Like, I'd never had a place like that to,
it had actual terrain.
It had terrain. And, I just felt like, you know, wow, I'm in college now. I shouldn't be playing with a radio controlled car. And I know now that I'm wrong. You know, I should have played with my damn car if I wanted to.
Yes, you really should have.
But the problem was I lived on a dorm hall with a bunch of guys from New Jersey who only listened to Van Halen. I think that might have had something to do with it. And I didn't have a strong enough self-identity at the time to play with my damned electric car.
Here's a question.
Sure.
Sort of leading off of a little bit off of that question. Were you and or are you the kind of person that plays games through to the finish?
Yes.
Like, say, Monopoly or Mousetrap or Risk?
In terms of board, I'm going to say I am. I've recently really, really gotten into Angry Birds. They just released the full version for Android. It's been out on iPhone for a long time. It just hit Android.
Right.
And I am such a completist with those type of things that, like, I will not go to the next round until I have mastered the previous one, you know? And, like, even with, like, with Battlestar Galactica, the recent BSG series, like, a lot of people said, oh, you know, don't bother with the last season or half season. But for me, it's like, doesn't matter. You know, I've come this far. I have to know. I have to go all the way.
You have to see it through.
Yep. And same thing with books. I read every word. Every word. How about you? What's your thing, Mr. Discipline, Mr. Order?
I never said it permeated through my entire life.
For this podcast, you are permeated with order.
Okay. Actually, I if I am playing solo, like if I'm playing a game on a computer... Yes. Like if I'm playing Risk against the computer or if I'm playing Monopoly against the computer, I absolutely will play through to the bitter end. Unless, of course, I'm losing.
Sure. Then you reset.
Yes.
But and then you play it to the end.
Yeah. If I'm winning, it's not enough to know, oh, well, if I continue this game, I will definitely win. I have to defeat the imaginary opponent.
Yep.
Yeah. Although when I was younger, I don't know that I probably played the game of Mousetrap as it is supposed to be played according to the rules on the inside of the box, maybe once. The rest of it was all just pulling it out and putting it together and setting off the little Rube Goldberg machine.
Yeah, we didn't have Mousetrap, and the only...
Oh, that's right, because you grew up in a half-Jewish house.
It just wasn't Jewish, it was Trafe. Mousetrap, Trafe. Mice, not kosher.
It was Mousetrafe.
Mousetrafe, that was the Jewish version for the wily Jewish kids. But I was only a wily half-Jewish kid.
Right.
No, the only friends that I had that had them, there were the pieces were missing. So it was one of those things like, oh, cool, mousetrap. Don't get that. It's missing half the pieces. So I don't think I've ever actually been in front of a mousetrap or mousetrafe set that had all its pieces.
Oh, wow. That's a shame.
Yeah.
I feel bad. I know what to get you for Christmas.
Huh. Yeah. And Mrs. Storm will summarily pitch it straight into the trash.
What? It's a piece of childhood. It's a happy memory.
Well, the Evel Knievel you bought me is still
here. Well, see, yeah, that survived. That made it past Mrs. Storm's skeptical eye.
But it's compact, and that's
it's
the
true.
Key.
That is true. Oh, but it's noisy, though.
Well, it's not like I run around all the time with it, though if I felt like it, I would, because I have self-identity.
That would be awesome if that was how you woke your wife up in the morning.
Yeah, except
like, instead of, honey, I'm making French toast, wake up, dear, or you just turn on the coffee and let the smell of it wake her up. No, every morning you sit at the foot of the bed and you wind up Evel Knievel and just let him ride up the sheets towards her head.
The critical flaw in that premise is you're assuming that I have ever woken up before Mrs. Storm.
This is true.
Wow,
only the times you have stayed up until she has woken up again.
It's kind of true.
Yeah.
And the occasional road trip where I have like a 6 a.m. flight.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, here's another question.
Okay, I like questions.
Hungry, hungry hippos.
Yeah.
Strategy or just mash the thing as rapidly and hard as you can?
See, when I was a kid, it was mash the thing. Again, being a half-Jewish, somewhat wily kid, I didn't have any of these games.
Yeah.
They were the dum-dum games, right?
Right.
So I only went and played them if there are other kids around, and generally the rules were never read, you know? It's like you didn't realize there were rules. So it generally was just a mashy thing.
Yeah.
If I played it today, I'd be meticulous.
You'd be all about the timing.
Yeah. I'd be like, okay, I need one more. I don't even know. Are there rules?
Well, it's not so much rules as it is your hippo needs to try and gather as many marbles as possible.
Oh.
And the two approaches are you either as rapidly and hard as possible just continue to mash down the thing so that your hippo just continually tries to eat versus trying to watch the
speed
and angle of the marble to try and catch it at the right time.
Okay, I understand now. Definitely. I had the timing thing, the spatial time wavelength thing happening.
Yeah.
I had formulas and shit for hungry, hungry hippos.
You were like Little Man Tate.
Yes, that was the Little Man Tate of Hungry, Hungry Hippos. That was my claim to fame.
Yeah. Wow, we got 17 plus minutes out of...
Yeah, we got a lot of mileage out of one...
The pithy quick thing I'd said.
Well, but it was, because we covered a lot of ground there.
That's true. We did go between many topics.
Now I have two more battles, or I have some Halloween-themed things.
Let's do Halloween.
Yeah. A couple of people asked this when we put the question out on Twitter. Actually, each of these, we sort of covered this a little bit, but it's asked more specifically, your favorite and or least favorite Halloween candy. It was actually Frecky that asked that. I wrote that down.
Okay. Least favorite, it's cliche. Well, I'll give you the cliche answer, which is apples.
Which
doesn't really count because
it's not a candy. And also, I'm going to put a caveat on the question to say it's something that you would more typically only get at Halloween or that you only notice at Halloween.
Then my alternate answer was going to be Bit of Honey.
I love Bit of Honey.
Yeah, I don't care for the Bit of Honey. Although it's interesting, like every so often I will.
Yeah.
It's like I'm like this with Bit of Honey and Pizza Hut, where roughly every, I would say, 9 to 11 months, not 12 and not 8, but any time between 9 to 11 months, I will get a craving. I'll be like, oh, I gotta have Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
Or I gotta have a Bit of Honey. And I get consumed with it and I have to go get some. And the second I bite down, I realize, wait a minute, Pizza Hut is awful.
Well, you're in luck because Pizza Hut has entered into a marketing deal with Bit of Honey to
prepare. Oh, they're making the
The Bit of Honey Calzone. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Now, everything I crave and hate all in one big doughy wrap.
So I have a good memory from Bit of Honey. I don't know if it's a good memory, but it's a sharp one.
Yeah.
I don't know if you did, but you'd go into your dad's office every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You did. And my dad worked for a federal agency, not one of the super secret spooky ones.
Right.
I'd hang out, and they had a candy machine, one of those that had one of those levers that you had to put some muscle into.
Yeah, like the kind you yank out.
Yep, and it would go shink, shink.
Yeah,
and
those are the best.
Oh, yeah. You really feel like you've done something.
Mm-hmm.
And I would sit there in the office feeling very grown up indeed, sucking on my Bit of Honey.
with all the GS-12s sitting around you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I was around 13s and 14s.
Wow.
At that point in my dad's career.
Ritzy.
Yeah, it was a schmancy place. And so that was special. My least favorite candy is actually, in my mind, similar, but far worse than Bit of Honey.
Mm-hmm.
It was just as sticky and liable to pull your teeth out.
Mm-hmm.
It is the dread Mary Jane.
Yeah.
No tolerance for Mary Jane.
No, not a fan of the Mary Jane, huh?
No, it's like a Bit of Honey, but without the honey, and little chunks of cardboardy peanut in the middle. It's like I'm eating it, and then all of a sudden, oh, God, someone like chewed this before me.
I see. I always looked at Bit of Honey and Mary Jane's as like old people candy.
Yeah.
Like, this is what a sad, tired old person eats when they want a quote treat, unquote.
Right. Like they marketed Toffee Fae to the older set, but they still went back to their Bit of Honey and their Mary Jane's.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm talking like grandpas and grandmas, like except people have no grandchildren.
Sure. In addition to like the hard lemon candies.
Yeah. You know what it is? That's the great aunt candy.
Yes. Yes. I'll say that the Mary Janes are great aunt candy. Now, we covered candy corn last week, I believe.
Or a few podcasts ago, certainly, yes.
Is that your favorite, or do you have a different favorite?
Well, I don't count that as a Halloween candy, because you don't usually get candy corn. People don't usually give it out. You know, you have it at Halloween, but I don't associate it as a Halloween candy, if that makes
true.
Any sense.
No, it does. I think that Brock's would sell, like, the packages of them, but you felt a little cheated when you got that, I think, because
exactly.
Like you were saying, it was around. Like, that was what you decorated the room with. You would just strew candy corn around, you know,
yep.
And walk around in candy corn for the
That's
week
right.
before Halloween.
Dance around the candy corn maypole.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, Halloween is the only time I will eat Butterfingers.
Mm.
I like Butterfingers. I don't go out of my way to eat them or buy them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they're my favorite. Probably, he said, thinking back, I would say my favorites are still probably, we've had variations on this discussions before. I like the fun size Snickers. Now, when I
right.
say that, not the little square ones.
No.
But the ones that are, they're still rectangles. They're just, I would say they're maybe like a fifth or a sixth the size of an actual Snickers.
And they're one that you specifically associate with Halloween, unlike other times when it would be like the regular candy bar, right?
Yeah, or the little squares.
Exactly. Cool. For a similar reason, Almond Joys are my Halloween candy.
Yeah.
For this, like what you were saying about Butterfingers is the same thing. Like, I don't think I've ever purchased an Almond Joy, you know,
mm-hmm.
just around. But it's only at Halloween when they appear that it's like this treat, you know. It's like, oh, wow, I can eat an Almond Joy because it's Halloween.
Yep. Speaking of candies that you only have selectively, you know what I didn't have for years and bought at the movies a couple of weeks ago and now have a box of them sitting in my house is Milk Duds.
Ugh. they don't even use chocolate on those anymore.
Oh no, it's a great sort of processed chocolate like product.
No, it's like vegetable goo.
That's what I mean, a chocolate like product.
Oh.
See, oh, I loves me some milk duds.
I guess,
and the beautiful thing about them for me is I can actually eat them in moderation. Like I can go to the cupboard and grab like two or three milk duds and eat them, and not have to go back and eat the remainder of the box.
I guess I lost my not my appetite, but for them and anything that's super sticky when I got a Bridge.
Yeah.
And my old Bridge that I had, I mean Bridge as in like my teeth. I don't mean I bought the Tappan Zee.
Someone still sold you the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, I own that. I own that.
Oh, you got the deed?
Yeah, I do. Indeed.
Did you buy it off of a bunny?
No, it was a gentleman in a slightly ruffled coat.
Uh-huh.
And he had a very official looking piece of parchment.
Mm-hmm. Did he have a boutonniere?
He did, and a bindle.
A skimmer hat?
It was a boater, I believe.
Oh, okay.
No, like that. My tooth works. Couldn't eat them anymore. So yeah. It's a crying shame.
It's a shame. I'm down with the duds.
Now you said a thing that reminded me of a thing, but now I've forgotten the thing.
I did interrupt to go on my milk duds run, so I apologize for that. So now it's Storm's choice for the next topic.
Oh, sure. Well, I could do the book report, though I have other fun stuff here as well. Let's do the book report.
Sure.
Propping up mostly for altitude at the bottom is Leonard Maltin's 2004 movie guide. Then I have Watchmen, Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And at the top of the stack right now is The Amazing Story of Quantum Mechanics. And that is a math-free exploration of same by a friend of ours, James Kakalios.
That would be Professor James Kakalios.
It is, though if you are perusing in the shelves at the bookstore, it does just say James Kakalios.
That's right, because he doesn't stand on ceremony.
Well, he doesn't need to. Once you hear him speak, you know he is a professor.
That's right.
But his first book was The Physics of Superheroes, and continues to be his first book, where he goes through and basically teaches physics, but using superheroes as the jumping off point. And he takes sort of the same approach with quantum mechanics, your protons, your neutrons, your neutrinos, your wave functions, all of it, and relates it in a way that even not hardcore nerds can understand.
Even dummy dumb heads?
Well, you have to at least be a dumb nerd, you know? Mm. Like, you're anybody who may not care. The thing is, if you've ever wondered about how does this shit work, and a lot of you who are listening...
Fucking magnets, how do they work?
Yeah, what is up with magnets? And a lot of you probably already know, but it might be amusing for you to read it anyway, to see how a dum-dum like me could learn about quantum mechanics, because it can be done.
Right.
Anyway, that is also a Paul and Storm recommends.
Sure. I'll go into a Paul and Storm recommends for a book that I don't even own yet, though I have read much of its content. How, you might ask?
How?
I'll tell you how. It is a book... that is a compilation of a number of essays written by a person who works for the Onion AV Club, which is their sort of film and TV and arts beat section of the Onion website, named Nathan Rabin, did a series called My Year of Flops, where each week he would basically write an essay about a different movie flop. And part of it was just describing the movie, and part of it was ruminating on why it flopped,
mm-hmm.
and reaction to it. And part of it is just sort of, you know, interesting side treks and relating how it relates to his life or memories or things. You know, sort of like it's a bit like Chuck Klosterman, if
yeah.
you've ever read any of his stuff, except less obsessed with shitty pop culture. Although there's plenty of shitty pop culture reference within it, but I'm just a huge fan of the way he writes, and I am a film nerd, and he completely speaks my language. And the book just came out today, I believe, as of this writing or recording, I should say. I'm actually writing down everything I'm saying as I say it. So technically, I was correct there. So I do not actually own the book yet, and the book is I believe he's expanded and put in some new movies and additional material and such, and I, in fact, am going out tomorrow to purchase it to read on our upcoming tour. But I highly recommend it just based on his writing that I know of.
Well, hurrah! Cool. I have a carryover from last week.
Okay.
Looking at my notes, and I'll make it brief because it was kind of boring.
Sure.
But I've been doing more thinking about hipsters.
Uh-huh.
And this is in defense of hipsters.
Okay.
I think not where it came from entirely, but it almost seems like it's a reaction to yuppies and not wanting to go in with all of that. Like, yeah. If you think about the yuppie thing, it's like, oh, you have to have this one and this car, that's the good one. And there's almost a sense of it's all image and that they don't really even appreciate things.
Yep.
That's the image of it. And that the hipster, it's more like, no, I'm only going to like things for their intrinsic value. And, you know, that, and it may or may not be true that those are the things that folks go in for, but that's at least the ethos, so kind of the opposite of the yuppie thing. So that's all. That's all I had to say about that.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm glad you got the chance to take that off your chest.
Thank you. It was bugging me. I have a sad story I'd kind of like to tell.
I would love to hear your sad story.
It's not it is kind of a tearjerker for me, but I won't cry. I lost a car this week. And it has bothered me more than I expected it to. Like, it's
yeah.
We had two cars, and it's a Jetta, a VW Jetta,
mm-hmm.
10 years old, with not quite 90,000 miles. And brought it in, and it needed a lot of work, like $3,000 worth of work. And I already knew it was going to need another $3,000 past that within like the next year. And, you know, the math just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
And I know it's an inanimate object, and it was never like my dream car. I liked it.
Yep.
But when you have a car for 10 years and you have been on, you know, me and Mrs. Storm driving around in said car, and me and Mr. Paul going on road trips in said car.
Yep.
And just how much of your life happens in this particular amalgam of matter, you know,
mm-hmm.
this car. And when it really hit home, we decided that we would donate it to the Red Cross and, you know, do the thing where they'll auction it and all that stuff.
Right, right, right.
So you need to take the plates off and clean it out and do all that stuff. And as you know, Paul, we have recently finished fixing up our garage.
Yep.
Which had never been used before, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it had been literally a wreck falling down.
Yep.
And only recently has it been used. So the Jetta had never, ever been in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I left it until the night before to actually clean out the car. So it's dark, and Mrs. Storm points out, oh, well, you should, you know, bring a flashlight, or better yet, just bring it in the garage and turn the lights on. Oh, mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Oh, you can do that now.
And it was great because I did. I pulled it into the garage and it was very bright and it was very quick. And I didn't, you know, worry about the boogeyman getting me on the street.
Right.
Because that happens in our neighborhood.
Because that's where the boogeyman is on the street. He can't go into garages. That's one of the rules.
Exactly. He is dispelled by the warm light of a garage. And I completed the task and I sort of walked back towards the house. I guess I needed to get a tool of some sort, and I looked back, and there was my 10-year-old Jetta
mm-hmm.
in the garage for the first time, only at the night before it was going to be shipped off to who knows where.
It's like the ending of Cold Mountain.
Yeah.
Those who've seen or read Cold Mountain know what I'm talking about, and I'm not going to explain it to those who didn't.
And I actually choked up a little bit, and I took a picture. And unfortunately, I didn't have a camera that could really capture it, but it had a very Hopper-esque feel to it. The cold distance.
It was the garage of broken dreams.
Very much so. And I guess I just feel a little guilty, you know. Yeah, it's an inanimate object, but at the same time, I really do hope it finds a good home.
Yeah.
So that's my sad story.
Oh, well, that is a shame.
Yeah.
Is that the sound of you crumpling up a piece of paper that had that sad story on it?
No. I cross off items on my note sheet.
I gotcha.
So I don't end up introducing the same topic twice.
That would be bad. Well, we are at 34, 35 minutes or so around here. Was there anything else pithy you wanted to get out before we go on our little practically 2-week trip?
No, I've got some great stuff that we can do at any time later. So let's go ahead and run down the where we're going to be, because we really need people to come out to these shows.
Yes, we do. East Coast, you are disappointing us. But we still love you. Don't get me wrong. Let me go to the Paul and Storm website so that I don't get any facts wrong. And I can do that because I have the internet right here in front of me.
Don't get the facts wrong. Don't get
on
the
On Friday
wrong.
The 23rd, we're going to be in Boulder, wrong. Colorado. Oh, good, you're done.
Yeah.
And it's an evening with Adam Savage and us, along with our special guest Phil Plait at the Boulder Theater.
That's bad astronomer Phil Plait.
Bad astronomer Phil Plait. It's going to be a great night. All the general admission seats are now only $20, including the service charge. It's such a bargain for you. So come on out, Boulder. If you're not at Mile High Con, or even if you are at Mile High Con, road trip, come out and show some love.
It's the perfect compliment to Mile High Con.
That's exactly right. Then we have a slew of Woodstocks. On the 27th, we're in Los Angeles at Largo. That's our, of course, mostly musical tribute to the 40th anniversary of the Dr. Demento show.
And it will make your head explode. We can't say why.
Yes. Yeah, let's just say if half of the potential secret awesome guests, in addition to the already publicized guests we have coming, we have various people we hope we might be able to get. If only half of them show up, then any nerd that it lives in the Los Angeles area and doesn't attend this show will regret it as if they had not fought on St. Crispin's Day with Henry V. But the people that will be there for sure, Chris Hardwick is going to be our guest host with us. Garfunkel and Oates, Hard and Firm, Molly Lewis, Mike Furman, Eric Schwartz, Marissa Tancheron, and Jed Whedon. Mm. And of course, a special appearance by Dr. Demento.
Oh, wow.
Incredible. Then on Friday the 29th, we're in New York City at the Best Buy Theater, right down in Times Square.
Our name is in lights.
It is. They have a big old marquee on Times Square, and I've seen the pictures. It's pretty cool when our little thing pops up. Jonathan Colton is guest host for that. Marion Call, great singer-songwriter. Drew Curtis, founder of Fark.com. Jason Finn, drummer for Presidents of the United States of America. MC Frontalot, nerdcore rapper pioneer, will be there. We're still working on more guests for that, so watch this space. On the 31st, Halloween itself. Oh, we should have mentioned all of these shows, heck, even including the Boulder show. Everyone is encouraged to wear costumes.
We will be.
We will do our darndest to. That's right, our costumes are coming in the mail. They should get there in time. They're gonna rule. That's New York. On Halloween, we're in Boston at the Wilbur Theater. Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy from Riff Tracks and Mystery Science Theater 3000 will be guest hosting there.
Uh-huh.
Marion Call will be there again, as will Mark Abrams, who is the editor of the Annals of Improbable Research and the host of the Ig Nobel ceremonies. Very funny guy. And Grant Imahara from the Mythbusters cohort of Adam Savage will be there.
Oh, and Adam Savage, of course, will be at all of these Woodstocks.
Yes, he will be at all these Woodstocks, although Will is not. These are the guest hosts we are speaking of. They're taking the place of Will, who is unavailable because he is filming things. We're also working on another guest or two for that show. The 29th, no, Woodstock 2.9 on November 2nd in Austin. That's in the great state of Texas at the Paramount Theater with Neil Gaiman. as guest host on that show. Our guest for that show will be Bill Amend, the writer of the Foxtrot, Jason Finn, the aforementioned bearded drummer, Molly Lewis, Mary Jo Peel, also from Cinematic Titanic and Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah.
The Red versus Blue creators, Rooster Teeth, they're a recent addition to that show, and Steven Steptoe Toulouse, who is the man in charge of Xbox Live Enforcement.
Who absolutely killed in Seattle and Portland.
He totally did. They'll all be there. And then on the 3rd of November in Dallas at the Granada Theater, the hilarious stand-up comedian Paul F. Tompkins is going to be our guest host there. I am so looking forward to that because I have been such a fan of his for so long.
Yeah, and I haven't seen his show yet. You know,
not just because he's the sole other member of Paul Club with me. he will be guest hosting, and Bill Amend, Jason Finn, Molly Lewis, and Steptoe, Stephen Toulouse, will be there as well. I don't know if it's Toulouse or Toulouse.
Toulouse, I think.
Yeah. And then a relatively new addition to our schedule on November 15th, which is a Monday night. We're going to be in Chicago doing an evening with us and NPR's Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, playwright, author, man about town.
Raconteur.
We're going to be at Lincoln Hall in Chicago. So come on out and see that. That's going to be great. We're really looking forward to that. And of course, we're doing the Joko Cruise Crazy in January. We have two new dates in December.
Well, we can get to that another time. I mean,
just saying, we're going to be in Raleigh and Atlanta in December. Check our website for those dates.
Also, go to pollenstorm.com to find out how to become part of the Brigade of Minions.
The Bela Lugosi Brigade.
Because everybody wants to be in the Brigade. And I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average.
How fortunate. This simplifies everything. Go do things.